Hi, and welcome to Adventure Dog Podcast, the podcast all about doing amazing things with your doggos. I'm Nathan Berry, she's Rue the Shark, and this is episode 11. Focus on the little things in life. Rue takes a break, and we interview another small dog who can find adventure in any location. Summer is just around the corner, and it seems like everyone is getting out and going to some super cool places. Rue and I have a cool adventure of our own coming up soon, but for the time being, we are laying low. We're kind of just taking it easy and just kind of doing our runs around the neighborhood, hitting up all of our local spots. Mostly, I'm just trying to save some money and get some stuff done around the house to prepare for our trip. But the other reason for this, for part of our upcoming adventure, we'll be doing an extreme amount of trail running. So we're both in what's called, in running terms, a taper. We've spent the last month or so building up, and now we're at the point where we rest before our big run. In my next episode, I'll probably cover this a little bit more. I'm going to get into some trail running and running stuff on the next episode. But for now, we're just doing a little less running and staying close to home, which is great. We get to spend a little time visiting spots that we normally wouldn't call an adventure, but it's important to find the excitement in even the little things and places that we go to. One thing that helps is to be creative. Since we have limited trails within 15 minutes of where we are, we will sometimes change the direction that we run. And I know it sounds simple, but often just changing the direction you go can give you a new perspective on an old trail. You can pick places that you normally wouldn't think would be adventurous. We live right down the street from a city park and a golf course, and we love to go out early in the morning or early in the evening and kind of cruise around the golf course. Of course, before or after all the golfers are out there. Whether you're walking or running, maybe even riding your bike with your doggo, stop and sniff. Listen to the sounds. Challenge yourself to look for the cool spots along your normal daily route and take a photo and make it look like you're in the middle of the wilderness. Even the small, unexpected places that we normally wouldn't consider can be adventurous. Today's interview with Elena and Baxter the Little Gentleman is a perfect example of that. No matter if your dog is big or, in her words, teeny tiny, there's always adventure to be found in the everyday places. Okay. I would love to talk a little bit, you know, kind of how you got up to 10 miles. Cause
yeah, definitely.
I'm sure you didn't just one day decide, hey, let's go do 10 miles.
Oh, no, definitely not. We didn't do it because he's tiny. So,
well, I mean, if you want to go ahead and just get started, we can get right into this. Okay. Well, if you'll introduce yourself and your dog.
So I'm Elena and my dog is Baxter. He's a little miniature schnauzer. And his Instagram handle is Baxter the Little Gentleman, and it's long, so I don't know if you want me to like spell it all out.
With periods,
Baxter. With periods between the words.
Dot little dot gentleman.
Yeah.
And I'll include that in the show notes so people can go right to it and find it. Well, tell me about Baxter.
He is a pretty awesome little dog. He's currently passed out in my lap. He's bored with the painting that we're doing right now. So, but he's from the get-go was a solid temperament-wise little dog. He slept through the night when I first got him. He was housebroken within like a month. He's just always been really good. He's a very steady, easygoing little guy. He's a lot of fun too. He thinks he's 200 pounds, but he's only 11. He picks the biggest dog in the dog park to go play with. That's his favorite thing to do.
Well, where did you originally get him from?
I got him from a breeder in San Antonio. I found them after looking for a couple months. Okay. And I got in touch with them and we talked for a few more months after that, just me kind of getting a feel for them because I was being pretty particular about where I got my next dog from. Mm-hmm. And I got to go before they're a closed kennel now because they in San Antonio, there was a lot of parvo outbreaks. And so they quit letting people come visit unless it was like a special circumstance. So I got to go before that all happened, though. And so I got to meet a couple of their adult dogs and a couple of their litters and just kind of get a feel for maybe which dog I would want a puppy out of because I was looking for something pretty specific temperament wise because my last dog had a lot of issues with anxiety and didn't really enjoy going places because it stressed her out so much. And part of that was on us for not socializing her well enough, but part of that was just not good breeding. So I wanted something that would be pretty solid.
Yeah, the socialization part's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Parvo outbreak. That's not the first time I've heard of parvo outbreak in Texas.
Yeah, parvo tends to be a lot worse in more rural areas where people don't vaccinate their dogs because it's just a cultural thing, honestly. Like, dogs aren't necessarily seen as family, their property or their tools. And so people don't always, why should I get my dog vaccinated? Like, why would I spend that money? It's just a dog is basically the mentality. Yeah. And so all it takes is one dog that probably lives outside, if we're being honest, that isn't vaccinated, walking around carrying that, and it just spreads. Yeah. And then people aren't careful with their puppies, and so their puppy gets it. And when I got Baxter, I wanted to socialize him a bunch, but also I lived in a very, very rural area. And so I was really – and parvo – there was a couple outbreaks of parvo in my area when I got him. And so I literally carried him around in, like, a hoodie pocket when we went places so he wouldn't have to touch the ground. And, like, I made people wash their hands before they pet him. Like, it – because it's – he weighed 2 pounds when I got him.
Yeah. And parvo can be devastating.
Exactly. Parvo's devastating for like a big puppy, and for a tiny puppy, there's almost no chance.
Yeah.
I did everything I could to keep him from getting parvo.
Yeah. Well, it worked.
Oh yeah, it did. It did.
Well, good. I mean, yeah, precautions are always good. And so you went through a breeder. Was there any specific reason or choice for that? You mentioned, I guess, temperament and some other things.
Yeah, I just wanted something. I mean, you can never really guarantee temperament, but I wanted a more, I guess, solid idea of what his temperament would be. And size was a really big factor because I needed something small to ride in my work truck with me. And I also like the fact that they are low to no shedding. And so I wasn't going to have my work truck, which did not belong to me, covered in dog hair. And I lived in a very small house at the time. So it was nice to not have to worry about cleaning up dog hair all over the place all the time.
I know that when we talked a little bit earlier, you talked about having done quite a bit of rescue previously, I guess, when you were in school.
Yeah. So when I went to college, my dad had grown very attached to Miles Joanne Shepherd, and so he didn't let me take her with me. So I was dogless. And my way of getting around that was fostering for local rescues. And so I would take care of the dog, train the dog, get to know its temperament and everything. And
Okay.
they paid for vet bills and food and everything. So it was my way of having a dog when I probably couldn't really financially support a dog. And so I got to get my puppy fix, and eventually that was the best part was the puppy fix. But my senior year of college, I started doing the more long-term
Okay.
fosters, so older dogs, 8 months and up, that kind of had behavioral issues. It was a lot more rewarding. Not that fostering isn't rewarding in all of its forms, but seeing a dog go from being terrified to walk through a
Yeah.
doorway and not being able to like make eye contact with people, it was just really rewarding, and it felt like a really good use of my time.
Yeah.
But I think the best way I've ever put it, when I was explaining to someone, was I helped so many other people find their perfect dog, and it was my turn to find, like, get my perfect dog, like exactly what I
Yeah.
wanted. So.
Okay. Well, I think that, so many people this day and age are so quick to judge, and I say this over and over. I said it in the last episode where, dogs come to us in so many different ways, and how we get a dog or decide to get a dog, shouldn't be an issue. I mean, obviously, of course, rescue is important, and we all try to go that route, but there are times when we make decisions for different reasons. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I think there's a big stigma with the whole like adopt don't shop thing. It should be
Sure.
adopt or shop responsibly. However you're going about getting your dog, it should be done responsibly. Baxter's account actually started out as my last foster dog's account.
Okay.
Raleigh was my last foster dog. And I started the account for him as a way to like post all the pictures, and the rescue had it linked on their page on his little profile. So people could go look at all of his little adventures and see all the tricks he knew. And it actually like helped him get adopted. And I
Nice.
just kind of like held on to the account. And then when I got Baxter, I was like, well, I don't want to bombard my family with all these pictures. I might as well start it back up. So it used to be Raleigh the Mutt until I got Baxter.
Okay.
And then Baxter's name is from a joke with my dad and Anchorman. One time, like years ago, he told me, he was like, I had a dream. I had a premonition that you're going to name your firstborn child Baxter. And I was like, I'm not naming my firstborn child after the dog from Anchorman. And then when I got Baxter, I was like, I don't know what to name him. Like, I couldn't pick. And then I remembered that, and I was like, there you go. My dad's prophecy has come true. I've named my firstborn Baxter, and it's a dog, so it fits. So that's why it's Baxter the Little Gentleman.
That's great. Okay. You got him in San Antonio. What did you do for work or while you were still in school?
So in Texas, I was a wildlife biologist on a hunting ranch,
Okay.
and we also raised and bred white-tailed deer. It's kind of It was a high-fenced 3,000-acre ranch,
Okay.
and when you live in an area where that's not like common, it's kind of weird to think about. But like, it was weird for me because high fence is illegal in Georgia.
What is
But
high
I went out,
fence?
like 8 foot, 9 foot fencing around your property,
Okay.
to keep wildlife in, basically. And so
Okay.
in Georgia, we have it at like research facilities. Like UGA has a deer barn, and they have high fence to keep their deer in, because they do research on white-tailed deer.
Okay.
But this, we had it specifically so we could have complete control over the genetics of the deer on our ranch. So it was like a giant genetics experiment, basically. And we raised deer and bred them, and we would sell them to other high fence ranches to stock their pasture
Okay.
so they could improve their genetics. It was pretty cool. I liked it a lot. I liked getting to work hands on with the deer. I got to catch fawns and tag them and vaccinate them, and that was always pretty cool.
Wow.
I'm not a big hunter. I don't really. I'm vegetarian, so if I'm not going to eat it, I'm not going to shoot it.
Sure.
But I would help guide hunts, and I had to do all of that stuff too.
Okay.
Baxter got to ride along for a lot of that stuff. His favorite thing was in the mornings when I'd tell him, like, do you want to go to work? And he'd get all excited and he'd run out to the truck and jump up in there and he'd just ride on the middle console while we drove around and checked deer and filled feeders. And it was pretty cute.
So you're out in the field pretty much all day?
Yeah, all day, every day I was out in the field. And then we had to work nights a lot of the time too, because when you work deer, it's less stressful for them to do it at night. And so we would go in to our breeding pens at night. And if we had to like move deer or sell deer, or whatever we had to do, we usually did it at night. And he didn't come along for that kind of stuff because we were actually out walking around with the deer, but all the daytime stuff.
Okay.
He got to go do. He's ridden in a tractor. He's got to do all kinds of stuff.
About how long were you out in Texas?
I was there for 3.5 years.
Okay.
It started as an internship and turned into a full-time job.
Were there any local spots in Texas, either on the ranch or outside the ranch, that y'all would go to on a regular basis?
Yeah. I mean, the ranch itself was kind of like a big hike. There was a big road, our like main road going down towards our equipment barn, and a lot of my pictures from when we lived in Texas are actually just different spots right off of that road or on that road. Because I lived 30 minutes from the closest grocery store.
Oh wow.
So we were in the middle of nowhere and it was really hard to get to places. And I worked every day. It was like being on call all the time when you work with live animals. So I had to be very strategic about when we went on other adventures. But the Guadalupe River State Park was a really fun one. It had a bunch of hikes that we could do, but also there was water access for almost all of them. And so that was a big thing for me in Texas summers with a small black dog who gets hot very easy. I like to be able to just dunk him in the water if I need to and let him drink from the river if I need to.
Well, it sounds like y'all are living adventure pretty much every day.
Oh yeah. From day one, he loves it. Aside from what he did on the ranch, he didn't go on his first like real hike until he was about 8 months old.
Okay.
Just because of not being able to make time work-wise, but also he had some health issues that we had to get figured out first.
Health issues.
But yeah, he has a congenital liver defect that we found out, or I found out about, when he was 6 months old, I guess, almost 6 months old. And it was just kind of a fluke that we found out about it, because what it is usually isn't diagnosed until the dog is like a senior dog and they start actually having issues.
Oh, wow.
But it's called portal vein hypoplasia, and it's basically microscopic liver shunts in his liver. And so he has to eat a very specific diet to manage that as best as we can.
So it is a manageable.
Oh yeah. As soon as it got diagnosed, it was a lot of blood work and a liver biopsy and all kinds of stuff to get it diagnosed. But once we figured out what it was, I started managing it. His vet said the sooner we start managing it, like, we were lucky that we caught it so early because it's less likely to have effects on him later on in life.
Okay.
So
scrolling through some of your Instagram photos, I noticed like a couple posts with the blood work data, and it's all over my head, of course, but
yeah, it's mostly over my head too.
But it seems like you kind of come from a biology field that you kind of have some basic understanding of that. How that's pretty fortunate.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's really fortunate. I don't know, when I was going through all of the process of him getting it diagnosed and everything, I just kept thinking, like, what if someone else had gotten him? Like, would they have given him all of these chances? And because my whole view on it was, as long as he's acting fine and like a happy, healthy puppy, because outwardly he had nothing wrong.
Okay.
I just found out about it through his pre-op blood work before his neuter. And as long as he was acting happy and healthy, I was going to do whatever I could to get it figured out. So, because a lot of times small dogs like can't survive with a liver shunt. So,
sure. And that blood work before he was neutered, that's a pretty normal thing.
It's an optional blood work that you can opt out of doing. And I opted into doing it just because he was still so small at the time. So I wanted to make sure everything was good before they put him under, basically.
Okay.
Because small dogs can have a hard time with anesthesia. And so I wanted to check all my bases before they put him under. And I'm glad I did it, because if I hadn't, I probably would not have found out about his liver deal. So,
yeah. And you say it being manageable. What is the management for that? How easy is it to keep this under control?
It's been pretty easy. At first, he was on a prescription diet, and it was doing his job, but his teeth were getting really gross, and his coat wasn't as nice as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so I switched him to a raw diet because I have a lot more control over what he's getting with that.
Was the prescription a kibble?
Yeah, it was prescription kibble.
Okay.
And he did fine on it. I just knew that I could probably find something better if I worked at it. So that's what I did. But so he's on a raw diet, and then he gets herbal supplements for liver support. And his blood work, the last two checks, has been flawless. So it's been working for us pretty well.
So tell me a little bit about his raw diet. Actually, I just, the last episode, talked to Kelly and Finney. And she does a raw diet for him. And we kind of got into some details. So I'm really curious, you know, what research and how you got to feeding him a raw diet, either just transitioning or, you know, anything about sourcing it and how you figured out what to feed him.
Yeah. So, it started off, I just fed him a pre-made raw diet. So I got it from Primal Pet Foods. And so it was already like pre-balanced and everything.
Okay.
Because that was what I felt most comfortable with at the time. I didn't feel confident in my ability to be able to source properly or to balance it out properly. And so we did that, and I just transitioned him the kind of normal way you switch kibbles, just by mixing in a little bit of the raw. And then eventually it moved to, like, he got breakfast that was the raw little patties, and then kibble for dinner, and then eventually we were just fully on the raw diet.
Okay.
And he handled it really well. He didn't have any stomach upset. He's way more excited to eat with this than he was with kibble. Like, he ate the kibble, but it was kind of because he had no other option.
Yeah.
He goes nuts for the raw stuff. Like, he's a very quiet dog and does not bark a lot, but if I take too long getting his food ready, he will make a fuss. And I just started switching him over to, I guess DIY raw is what you'd call it, but
sure.
I'm still using pre-made grinds from this company called Hair Today, like hair is in the rabbit kind of hair.
Yeah.
And those grinds are balanced out 80-10-10 with the muscle meat, bone, and organ meat. And so I'm using that and some extra supplements until I'm 100% confident to start kind of like piecing it together myself.
What supplements do you include?
I get my supplements through Kairos Dog Snacks, or I think they just changed to Kairos for Dogs is okay. Their handle on Instagram now. It's the same company that does Ruff Bar. And
okay.
Stu is amazing, and she had schnauzers, and so she's been really helpful with telling me like what I should add to his diet to help balance it out and what herbs would best support his liver and all of that. And it's been like just wonderful getting stuff from her and working with her.
Yeah, I was actually looking at their feed earlier.
Feed,
no pun intended.
Right.
They, I guess they do a whole bunch of different stuff, CBD and and treats and things like that.
Yeah, and she's been working on meal replacement bars too, which are really cool that use cricket protein.
I was gonna ask you about that. I saw one of your latest posts, and this is something for me personally, as a runner, I've been looking into using cricket protein. And then I saw that and I got really excited because it's starting to become a thing where there's more cricket protein stuff out there.
Well, because it's one of the most sustainable and like eco-friendly proteins out there. Because I mean, they're crickets, they don't take a whole lot. But yeah, it's still kind of a prototype what we have that's in the picture. So it could change. That they're still tweaking some things, I think. And she sent everything off for analysis. Baxter loved it, and it was really helpful because I ran out of time to feed him before our hike that day. And so I just, after, or we got, I guess, to like the cool spot of the hike when we hiked Max Patch. So I just fed him up there, and he went nuts for it. So.
I've done a little bit of research, and I know at first a lot of people are going to hear cricket protein and they're going to kind of be like, ah, gross. They actually have to pass the same food and drug regulations as human grade food in order
Exactly.
to raise and grow. And they are, I guess they're farm raised crickets, essentially. They raise it and then they turn it into a flower.
Yeah, pretty much.
Really cool. They're still kind of expensive right now. It's starting to take off, I think, as more and more human grade products come on the market, and it's taking off slowly but surely, but it's exciting to see that.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's so convenient for like things like backpacking. I haven't gotten into like any big backpacking trips quite yet with him, but I could see that being really handy for him just because when a dog is raw fed, it's kind of hard to travel with raw meat. So we use a freeze-dried stuff usually when we travel, but those bars are even more compact than the freeze-dried stuff that I use. So
Well, it looks like it's the same size as just a rough bar. It's the
yeah,
same
pretty
company too.
much. Yeah. It's basically the same size. Yeah, Kairos is like an offshoot of
Okay.
Ruff Bar.
But yeah, that looks really cool, and I can't wait to see that and try those out. Yeah, crickets are so much more sustainable than animal protein that, gosh, I'm not even gonna go down that route. This is
Yeah.
the dog podcast, not the farming podcast. So I
Exactly.
won't go into all the environmental stuff with animal protein. But yeah, I can't wait to see more about that. That's really
Oh,
cool.
yeah, no, me too.
You recently, and I don't know if we actually mentioned it yet in the interview, that you moved to Georgia.
Right. I moved back to Georgia in January. So he turned one in September 2018. So he was coming up on 1.5, I guess, when we moved back.
Okay. You just talked about Max Patch.
Yes,
And I'm.
that's the most recent hike that we did.
Where is Max Patch?
It's near Hot Springs, North Carolina, I think it was. I don't know how to explain it. I'm terrible with directions. I get lost walking around Athens, and I live here. But we drove up to Pigeon Forge and camped there for the night because it was our kind of trial run in a tent because we're going to Wyoming in a week and a half.
Okay.
So I needed to make sure that he could handle being in a tent. And so we did that. And then I drove to Max Patch the next morning. And it was mildly terrifying because I'm really, really afraid of heights. And driving on mountain roads is not my favorite thing to do. And it was, I think, 5 miles of mountain road to get to the trailhead.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was beautiful, but I was also terrified the whole time.
And this
But
is, I guess, north to kind of give people an idea. This is in between where the Great Smoky Mountains, and I guess it's right on, I want to say it's right on the border of North Carolina and Tennessee. So you're talking
yeah,
about kind
it's
of,
right in the middle there.
okay, at
Yeah,
the
that's why I think I have such a hard time explaining where it is.
So you're the first person I've talked to from the East Coast.
Okay.
Everyone up until now has been either West Coast or somewhere in the middle. So I'm glad to actually talk to someone that's kind of from the South, from the East Coast, that has some adventures over in that area. But you're basically right on the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm. We're pretty close, yeah. We've hiked parts of the Appalachian Trail. We're an hour and a half south of Helen, and there's a bunch of Appalachian Trail trails there. And so we've done, I think, two different trails there. I guess the one big one that we did was technically like three different trails.
Okay.
And that was, we did about 10 miles in that one day.
Wow.
And it was a lot.
Wow.
It was exhausting. But
I can imagine.
He handled it like a champ, though. I have that Kergo backpack that you can carry your dog in just in case, like, he got hurt or something. Okay. And I carried him, I think, for a mile just because I felt bad for him. He didn't really need to be carried, but I figured he could use a nap. So I put him in the backpack and he fell asleep for about a mile until I made him walk again. But he loves it. It scares the living daylights out of me because he literally likes to walk right on the edge. So I have to make sure if we're at near any edges, he has to be hooked up to the leash and he has to have his harness on so I can reel him back in if he decides to jump, because he's pretty fearless. So
Rue is the same way. She'll get right up to the edge on some of these places.
I hate it.
Which makes for great photos, but it gets me nervous. Definitely.
Yeah, it gives me the willies when I have to get over like close and grab him and pull him, because I love the views, but I don't want to be close to the edge while I'm looking at the view.
Yeah. So how did you condition him and kind of get him to that point? And how long did that take for you? I mean, that's a pretty big hike for any dog.
So I knew he could do about 2 miles just because that's how far it was from my house to our equipment barn on the ranch down that dirt road.
Okay.
And so knowing that he could do that, I just kind of really just gradually increased our hikes by maybe 2 miles, a mile, depending on elevation gain and all of that. So we did at the IM fields at UGA, there's a trail system in this little area called the Oconee Forest that UGA manages. And I could usually squeeze in 3 to 4 miles just by wandering and looping around over and over again there. So we started off doing that. And then I had a weird like 2 weeks after I moved back where I didn't really work at all. And so I had a lot of free time. And so we just kind of did it over 2 to 3 weeks. We went hiking almost every single day. And we went to Fort Yargo State Park, and they have a massive trail system there with a lot of mountain bike trails. And so we hiked there, and we did 6 miles one time and then 7 miles another time. And once we hit 7 miles, it was kind of like, what's the difference between 7 miles and 10 miles? It's really not that bad. So after that, I kind of had a pretty good feeling that he would be able to handle it. And again, I have that safety net of the Kergo backpack that I can shove him in there and carry him if he gets tired. So,
yeah. Do you have any plans for doing even more than that?
I would like
longer than 10 miles?
Yeah, I would like to do like a 2-day backpacking hiking trip, maybe up in that Helen area on a section of the Appalachian Trail, if I can figure it out right to where it loops around and I can get back to my car without having to have someone come pick me up.
Yeah.
But
and there's
like
so many trails up in that area. I'm sure that would be a pretty easy thing to do.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even if it's just a like out and back, I just prefer loops because I personally will get bored if I have to see the same thing more than once. So I like loop trails a lot. But yeah, I guess that's kind of the struggle of hiking on by yourself, is you don't have two vehicles to drop at one location and then hike to that one. But I know in Wyoming, I don't think we're planning on doing anything crazy like 10, 11 miles, because everybody's kind of different skill levels. So
Sure.
I think we're going to keep them pretty short, or do hikes where people can like kind of stop midway and hang out while other people summit or whatever they want to. So
Yeah, just kind of laid back and taking it easy, it sounds like.
exactly.
You mentioned it was his first time sleeping in a tent.
Yeah, Max Patch, that was his first time sleeping in a tent. He did really good. He was a little unsure at first, mostly because there were just other people kind of around. And so he was confused as to why he could hear people, but he couldn't see them.
Yeah.
But he handled it really well. And I put a blanket kind of down by my feet, because that's usually where he sleeps, is down by my feet when we're
Okay.
at home. So I kind of bunched up a blanket down there, and it's a very, very small tent. It's a one person tent. So he pretty much was either sleeping right on top of me or down by my feet.
Yeah.
But he did a really good job. We just need to work on not exploding out of the tent as soon as I open the door, because that's what he did. He took off for a second. So he either is going to need to have his e-collar on before I open the door, or the leash on, or
Yeah.
doesn't just take off, because he was raring to go.
Did you try doing like a trial run in the back, like in the backyard with him to see how he would handle it, or was it just kind of a trial by fire and
We actually did a trial run in the house, because I just bought my condo, and so before that we were staying with my parents, and my parents just sold their house, the house that I grew up in. And so I was staying there finishing up some packing, and I had all my camping stuff with me. I was like, you know what? There's not a bed in here anymore, so I might as well set up the tents and all my gear. And so, because I hadn't slept, I had just gotten the tent. Well, I guess I'd had it a while, I just hadn't used it. So I hadn't slept in it either. And so I kind of wanted to set it up. And so we slept in the tent inside the house
Tent
the first
party.
time. Yeah. And he did really good then. And so I figured he'd be fine, like actually outside in the tent. But it was a little bit of trial by fire.
Yeah. I know being outside kind of changes things. It all those noises and being in an enclosed space like that. Well, cool. He did all right.
Oh yeah, he handled it really well, and I figured he would. He's pretty adaptable. As long
Yeah.
as there's not gunshots or fireworks, he's game for anything.
If there's gunshots
Those are
and
his
fireworks, I won't be in the tent. I'm out of there.
yeah.
I'm out.
That those are his deal breakers. So
Yeah, me too. Do you keep him on a I think I saw a few photos. It looks like you keep him on a long lead.
yeah, I use a 20-foot long line.
Okay.
That we got it from Sloppy Chops. That's biothane, so he can beat the crap out of it, and it's held up really well. I think we've had it close to a year now, and it's in great shape.
Is he always on leash?
Most of the time, yeah, he is on leash, solely because where we're hiking usually requires him to be on leash.
Okay.
He is e-collar trained, and so if it's an area where he can hike off leash, I will let him off leash. But it also just depends on how busy the area is and if there's a lot of dogs,
Yeah.
just because he loves other dogs more than anything else in the world. So I like to have him under a little bit more control, and so I'll put him on leash if there's a bunch of dogs, just because not everybody wants a little tiny ball of fur running up to them and trying to play with their dog. But yeah, but that long line has been a lifesaver, because it gives him the illusion of freedom.
Yeah.
So he thinks he's off leash, but I can still reel him back in if I need to.
And I guess he's still got a pretty good recall.
He's pretty good. It's iffy. He has a mind of his own.
Okay.
I mean, he is terrier through and through, so he's pretty stubborn and likes to do what Baxter wants to do. So he will recall, but a lot of times he will take the longest possible route to get back to me, so he can sniff and pee on all the things that he wanted to sniff and
Of
pee on,
course.
but he's still doing what I asked him to do, so it's hard to get mad at him.
Guess small dog, big attitude.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of attitude. It was because my dog before him was an Australian Shepherd, and so I mean, you told her to jump, and she'd ask how high. Like she would do whatever you wanted her to do. And Baxter, you ask him to do something, and it's more about what's in it for him.
Yeah.
So learning to work with that kind of temperament was very interesting because I was used to a much more biddable dog that just kind of went along with whatever I wanted her to do, and I had to kind of figure out how to convince him to do what I wanted him to do. And he's super, super smart, and he knows a ton of tricks. But getting to that point was definitely exhausting.
Sure. Well, other than the long lead and using the e-collar, is there any other gear or stuff that you use on a regular basis with him?
Yeah, we have a harness from Groundbird Gear, and it is the best money I've ever spent because he is very small with very strange proportions.
Yeah.
He's very barrel chested, and so he has an 11 inch neck, but his girth is 18
Yeah,
inches.
I don't think that we actually brought this up about how small he really is. He's
Yeah, he's about 12, 13 inches at the shoulder.
okay.
He's teeny tiny. He's a tiny little guy.
He is a miniature schnauzer. I mean, he is small.
Yes, and he's small for a miniature schnauzer. They usually run like 16 to 20 something pounds.
Okay.
So he's small for a miniature too. His parents were on the smaller side and all of that. But he's very, very small. He was 2 pounds when I got him, and it was terrifying until he hit about 4 pounds because I was constantly afraid I'd step on him.
And he now weighs in at how much?
11.5 pounds.
Okay.
I'd like him to be 12, but he has the metabolism of a jackrabbit, so it's hard to keep weight on him. But he's very active. But at 11 and a half, he is still like a healthy weight. I just would
Yeah.
prefer him to be 12,
Well,
but we're working on it.
okay.
He looks a lot bigger in pictures until you see a picture with like
Someone's
me
foot.
holding him or like him next to another
Yeah.
dog, and then it puts it into his perspective. So, because I met up with like Brittany and Natasha
Yeah, I
for
was looking
them,
at that
yeah.
photo where all three of them are in the back of the car and he's standing next to Zephyr and I'm like, whoa.
Exactly.
He's like the same
Yeah.
size as Dan.
Yeah, he is. He's the exact same size as Dan. They're
Okay.
so cute together, like little squirrel and a little black bean running around together. It's so cute.
Being that small, I can imagine finding a harness, finding gear for him is pretty difficult.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really, really great companies out there that they make stuff in his size, kind of. Like, because he has the neck size of a small dog, but the girth of a more medium sized dog almost.
Okay.
And so he's always kind of borderline between sizes. And Groundbird Gear is tailor made. So you send in a bunch of measurements to her, and then she makes it specifically for your dog.
Okay.
And it's all like really breathable material that's really sturdy. And so he doesn't get hot underneath the harness, which is another big thing for me because he does get hot really easily. But she also makes packs. And I just at the time couldn't afford a harness and the packs. So I just got the harness and I'm saving up for the packs because it's pretty much impossible to find packs that fit a dog his size that
Yeah.
don't shift and chafe.
So you can actually get the pack separate and it will fit on the harness.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would just send her more measurements and like the old measurements from when I got his harness, and she would just use all of that
Okay.
to put together the packs.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I
no,
like
it's a
that.
great, great company. It's worth every single penny to have something that fits him that well,
Yeah.
that he's actually comfortable in. And I guess another thing that we use a bunch is he has a cooling coat that I use a lot in the summer because he just gets really, really hot. And so we have a rough wear cooling vest that I can soak it in water and wring it out, and then it keeps him cool
Yeah.
using evaporation. that's been really helpful.
Getting one of those. I've really been interested in that, especially here in the South, because it's so
exactly.
The problem is it's so humid and hot that that evaporation is a really difficult thing to keep going.
I used it on a pretty humid day a couple weeks ago. We were hiking the Davidson Arabia Mountain Trail, and I used it then, and it still worked pretty well. It didn't dry out as fast was the only thing, but it still kept in pretty cool,
okay,
which was nice because it was very hot that day.
Yeah, I haven't specifically gone with a cooling vest, but this is one of the reasons I use bandanas on a regular basis, I'll wet them down, and it provides, well, for one thing, a little bit of like shade, but then as it evaporates, it kind of helps cool off just a little bit too.
Yeah, I've done that before too. He has more bandanas than I would like to admit. And so if we're in a pinch and I've forgotten the cooling coat or something, or it gets hotter than I thought it would, I'll wet down his bandana, and he hates it, but it keeps him cool. So I don't really care if he hates it.
And it looks good.
Oh yeah. He looks so cute. He's got so many outfits. I'm a little bit OCD about them matching. So he's always got something on that matches.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. That's really important.
Oh, yeah. Style is key when you're adventuring. It's got to look awesome.
Scrolling through, you have some just beautiful photos. You've got a terrific eye just throughout the Instagram feed. Day one looking at these. They're amazing.
It's been a long process.
Sure, and it always is. It's a never-ending process, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. But I want to bring up, there's a couple photos that I kind of want to highlight. First of all, his size is, it's hard to really compare him, but when he's standing next to three other dogs, which is two of which have already been on the podcast, Zephyr Trex and Bandit's Mighty Adventures, mm-hmm. and all three of them are standing and you can see his size, and it's an awesome photo.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, honestly, Zephyr's a lot smaller in person than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
He's very lean and noodly, but he's a little bit smaller than I thought he would be. So it was kind of cool seeing him in person. And he's such a funny dog.
Do you know where that photo is?
Oh, gosh. I went up to Dallas to meet up with them, and it had rained a lot, so there was a lot of flooding, and we'd gone to a golf course that had a trail that went alongside it and had to turn around halfway because it was flooded. And so it was just a rock outside of a golf course that we took that picture at. And it looks all cool and adventurous, but it was right next to the road. But I can't remember exactly what the place was called.
No worries.
I'm terrible about geotagging things. I should, so I remember. But I take all these pictures, and then I post them like 2 weeks after I took them. And so I can't always remember where I took them.
Well, that says something. If you can get a photo on a golf course, we're the same way. We live not too far away from a golf course, and if you just angle it just right, it looks great. But then that's the great thing, that you know, even a golf course is fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like all my dirt road pictures in Texas, like 99% of my pictures from when I lived in Texas were off of that same Caliche road, and it was all just about the time of day that I took it, whether it had rained or whether it was really dry. There's the picture that I did after the movie Bird Box came out with him in the tall grass. That's literally by our, like, where we dumped the trash. Like, it was just tall grass by where we would dump trash. It looked all cool, but if I had taken a picture a little further back, it's not cool at all. So it was a lot of working with what I had because I didn't have a whole lot of options.
Well, there's another really cool one that I want to ask you about. And this one, I can tell you, it really is a true adventure. I mean, it's beautiful in the photo. He is standing kind of in the middle of a stream, and it's all white rock. And you can see kind of in the background these white rock cliff bluff area stretches out behind him. And it is beautiful.
That was the Guadalupe River State Park.
Okay.
So he's standing in the Guadalupe River, and it had those really cool like bluffs off to the side. And I actually had to edit out some people's tents that were in the background, like pop-up tents, because people go and they just like bring their family, they stay for the day, and they just like set up shop on the side of the river and hang out
I can
because there's
totally
all
see
these nice
why.
little pools. It's
Yeah.
beautiful.
That looks like a great place.
It's so much fun. And there's so many spots along the river where you can get access to the water. So if you didn't want to be around like the really popular spots, you could just walk a little bit further down the trail and find a less popular spot. But pretty much, I think all of my water pictures from when I was in Texas were taken at the Guadalupe River State Park. We went, I think, four times. Four different times while
Okay.
I was in Texas.
You've got some more recent, speaking of water photos, there's some great pictures of some waterfalls, and it, to me, that is looks just like being somewhere in Georgia. Of
Are they the little waterfalls? Like the I
Yeah.
yeah, that's a Harris Shoals Park. It's literally just this random park in downtown Watkinsville kind of
Okay.
area. And it's another one of those places. If you angle it just right, it looks like it's a cool, wild adventure, but it's really just a dinky little park.
You're just hanging out in downtown.
Yeah, but it's awesome. I used to go there when I was a kid, and you just like walk around on the shoals and laugh at people who slipped and fell. And then you would slip
I
and
shouldn't
fall.
laugh at
But
that.
yeah, I mean, karma always got you. So
Yeah.
you'd lose a flip flop to the shoals. But I had kind of forgotten about it. And then I was just looking for something quick that day to do with them after I got off work because I teach middle school now.
Okay.
And I remembered it. I just drove past it and was like, that'd be a cool place to take Baxter. And so I took him, and because I've just been trying to build up his water confidence,
Yeah.
because he's not a strong swimmer. So just letting him kind of like walk around and mosey in the shoals was really nice.
Well, it definitely looks like a really cool spot. And it goes
It
to
is.
show that any place can be an adventure, even if it's just a
Yeah.
downtown park.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think that's kind of an underlying theme to
Yeah.
my account or his account because I mean, we don't always get to go on big adventures. I just, with work in Texas, I never had time. So we did a lot of little local adventures. And now that it's summer, I have a lot of time because I don't have work in the summer.
Yeah.
During the school year, I'm pretty busy. And so I have to be pretty smart about how we plan our adventures.
Well, speaking of planning, any future trips coming up?
Yes, we are going to Wyoming on the 12th for a big meetup with a bunch of girls and their dogs, and I'm really excited about it. I'm kind of nervous because I'm flying with Baxter, and it's going to be his first time flying, and I'm not the most confident flyer, so it'll be an experience. It's going to be a bunch of fun. We're going to be camping and hiking out in near Medicine Bow,
Yeah,
and I'm really excited.
I think I've talked to, of course, the going through the Instagram connect the dots. I think I've talked to a few people now that are all going to be involved in this.
Yeah,
So,
I think you talked to almost everybody that's gonna be there.
yeah, well, it sounds really cool. How is he going to be flying?
I think he'll be fine. He's great in the car. And I bought his carrier that he's going to ride in on the plane. And
Okay.
so he's been riding in that in the car,
Yeah.
just to kind of build up positive associations with it because he loves car rides. So he does great in it. The whole drive up to Tennessee, it was like 4 hours. He rode in there with the lid shut and he was totally fine.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to give him, he gets like CBD oil regularly, just kind of help with absorption of his supplements, but I'm probably going to give him some of that too, just to help keep him more level while we're dealing with the airport part of the
Yeah.
trip.
How
I think he'll be okay.
will he be I mean, I guess because I've never flown with a dog, so I don't even know how to ask, will he be flying with you, or will they be putting him on the plane?
Oh, no, he's flying with me.
Okay.
He will not be going under the plane. He's my carry-on.
Okay.
Yeah, so he'll be flying under the seat in front of me, pretty much, in his little carrier, because it fits under the seat.
Okay.
And so he will go there, and I'm flying, like, a really, really early flight, so hoping that the flight attendants will be super nice and let me, like, let him poke his head out.
Yeah.
But even if he can't do that, he'll be okay. And I've already looked ahead at the airports that we're going to, and they have, like, doggy relief stations and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty confident it's going to go smoothly.
Were there any special requirements with either, like, the size of the carry-on or anything about having him on the plane with you?
So yeah, the carrier has to be a specific size because it has to be able to fit underneath the seat in front of you.
Okay.
And actually the carrier that he has is cool. It's one of those Sherpa ones. So the back of it compresses a little bit so it can fit all the way under the seat.
Okay.
And it's small, but he fits in it fine and can turn around and stand up and all of that. And then he has to have up-to-date vet records proving that he's healthy and has all of his shots. And I have to pay extra both ways, which is the suckiest part of it. But it's worth it, not having to board him.
Yeah, if my dog could fly with me, I'd hands down be happy to pay that extra fee, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Unfortunately, Rue's a little too big. She can't go as a carry-on.
But, well, that was another reason I got a small dog this time around, because I've always had big dogs.
Yeah.
And I just wanted something that was easier to travel with.
Yeah, that works.
So,
So for that trip to Wyoming, do y'all have any specific plans or anything that you're looking forward to doing while you're there?
Just the hiking and getting to meet all the girls in person. I've met some of them, but not all of them.
Yeah.
And so getting just hang out with them and meet them in person is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really excited and also nervous about all the hikes, because the elevation change is going to be pretty brutal for me and Baxter. But
hopefully not too bad.
I'm still excited about it. Yeah, I mean, I lived in Montana for a summer and handled that pretty well, so I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, he's going to be he's going to be hanging out with the big dogs.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of big dogs, except for Finn and Cuddy are his size.
Oh yeah.
I think Dan might be there too. So
there's gonna be a whole mix of all different sized dogs. So
it's a wide variety.
Good. He'll have someone to share some I would say smaller adventures, but he'll have someone his size to hang out with.
Exactly. Even if he doesn't think he's their size. It's always nice to have some small dogs around him.
Well, there is really only one big question left to ask, and and that's, you know, pretend that I'm gonna take care of all your responsibilities. So of course you're already off for summer break from teaching, but you know, don't worry about anything. We're gonna take care of your condo, we'll finish painting it for you, and we're gonna take care of all your expenses, and you get a ticket to go anywhere with Baxter. Where would that be, and what would you do?
Alaska, hands down. I want to go to Alaska so bad. It's a wildlife biologist's dream. So,
yeah, you answered that pretty quick.
Yeah, no, I want to go to Alaska so bad. And I would love to be able to take him with me. I mean, that's a pretty big trip, and it's Alaska. It's pretty crazy there. But I would love to be able to take him there and go to some of the big parks and just hike around and see all the cool animals.
Any certain places in Alaska?
Gosh, what is it? Denali. I would love to go there.
Yeah.
And I mean, even some of the bigger cities like Juneau would be really cool to go see. Just all of it, honestly. I would love to just spend like a month or two bumming around Alaska.
Well, you've got quite a while between now and next semester, so
maybe one summer we'll go do that for real.
Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty reasonable and pretty easy thing to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Driving or flying?
I don't know. That's a long drive. I guess I could make it a cool drive, though, and hit a bunch of stops and visit people along the way.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe driving. That way I'd have all my stuff. That's the one thing I don't like about flying is being limited with what I can bring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely I can imagine. I've never been, but the drive has just got to be amazing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And there's so much stuff along the way. Okay, well, we will get on this. We'll just set you up with an RV and
Yeah.
we'll get you out on the road.
Perfect.
So, like I said, the whole Instagram connect the dots, we've kind of already talked to just about everyone that you're friends with, but of course, if there's anyone that you want to give a shout out to in particular, who would that be?
Yeah, so my actual in real life best friend has a Bookstagram where she posts like books that she's read and really cool, just little short reviews on them. And it's called A Folded Corner. And I told her I'd shout her out. But it is really cool just in itself.
So is it just all
And
books in general or any
yeah,
specific
it's
kinds?
just all books, whatever
Okay.
she's reading at the time. And she reads a pretty good variety of books. So that for sure, A Folded Corner. And then Robin Ventures is another one.
Okay.
And along with that, Girl Meets Merle,
Yeah.
because they're kind of like my go-tos for advice on small dog gear because they both have smaller dogs.
Yeah. I'm looking at Robin Ventures right
Oh, yeah,
now.
no. Robin Ventures is awesome. I probably bug her so much with questions about gear, but her, Robin and Baxter are basically the same size, so I always just kind of run stuff by her.
Oh my goodness. She's small, and then there's one even smaller.
Oh yeah, Maui. Maui is so cute.
Wow. These are great photos.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Oh yeah. It looks like. Are they out in California?
Yes, I don't know
Okay.
where in California, but out in California, I
Yeah.
think. Yeah.
Some just some beautiful photos from
And
Southern.
she has a really cool blog, like reviewing different gear and comparing it to other gear that's for the same purpose.
Okay.
And so I like that a lot, as a person that has a small dog, and there's a lot of options to consider, so.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely have to put her in the put a link to her in the show notes. And I'll have to check out her blog as well.
Yeah, it's super helpful.
And then you also, I think you mentioned Girl Meets Merle.
Girl Meets Merle, yeah.
Okay.
Marley and Coop, they're super cute.
Yeah, they sure are. Hopefully I can get them on for an episode coming up here
Oh,
pretty soon.
yeah,
That'd
that
be
would be
good.
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has given me a bunch of tips on gear too, because Marley's pretty small.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, Elena, this is awesome. I'm glad to have you on. So I've kind of have like we're on the small dog path right now because I just had
Yeah.
Finn. Now I've got Baxter. So yeah, I might have to keep up with
Get
interviewing
some
a
small adventure dogs.
absolutely. That's what it's all about. All adventures. Let's see, I gotta figure out how to say it. All adventures, great and small. Well, it's all
Yes.
dogs, great and
All
small.
dogs, great and small.
Well, thank you again so much. And I will have to keep up with you, especially because I would love to head down that direction. Every year I talk about going out west, but at some point I need to make an east trip. I need to go east and
Yeah.
south and go check out some of the places over there. So I'm definitely gonna have to hit you up on some advice on where to go, especially the Appalachian Trail area. That's
Oh,
just
yeah, definitely.
beautiful stuff over there.
Yeah, I can definitely give you a couple ideas of places to go.
Good. I look forward to that. Well, thank you again, and I will talk to you again soon.
Okay, sounds good.
Bye-bye.
No problem. Bye.
And that was Elena talking about her little dude, Baxter. For the next few episodes, I'm going to focus on dogs that do really specific activities like trail running, backpacking, biking for each episode. So if you do something really awesome and unique, or if you know someone who does something different with their pup, let me know. You can email me at nathan@adventuredogpodcast.com, or you can send me a message on Instagram @adventuredogpodcast. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and while you're there, it would be much appreciated if you took a second to leave Rue and myself a rating and a review. We will catch you next Friday, and as always, thanks for listening. Now, go and have an adventure with your doggos.